You're listening to the Quince Podcast.
Timing. That is what it came down to for lawyer and long-time workers' right activist Sudha Bharadwaj's bail plea, which was accepted by the Bombay High Court on 1st December. Bharadwaj, who is one of the accused in the Bhima Koregaon case, was arrested on 28th August 2018 and has been in police custody for the past 3 years at Bayakulla Jail. In her bail plea, she argued that she should be granted a default bail as the Pune Sessions Court judge, who had passed several important pre-trial orders in this case, was not a designated judge to hear cases under the Unlawful Activities and Prevention Act. But this same request of appeal, however, was denied to the other accused in the case, even though it was the same court that heard this case, because of the timing of when they filed their default bail pleas. Now, the National Investigation Agency has stated that they will appeal the High Court order in court. But on what legal grounds would this be? And why were the others not given bail under the same conditions? How exactly do default bails work? To discuss this, for today's episode, we spoke to Vakasha Sachdev, the Quince legal editor. You're tuned in to The Big Story, the podcast where we dissect the headline-making news for you, and I'm your host, Himmat. Bharadwaj's bail was argued on technical points only. The first point was argued under Section 167(2) of the CRPC, where the accused can only be detained up to a particular time. In this case, it was 90 days. Now, if the police file a charge sheet after this time, then a quote-unquote default bail is granted to the accused. The Pune police, in Bharadwaj's case, filed the charge sheet well over the 90-day deadline on 21st February 2019. Now, the thing is that in UAPA cases, the deadline can be extended to 180 days if a valid extension order is passed. The investigation agency, in this case the Pune police, the NIA only took over later, did apply for such an extension and got it from a Pune Sessions Court. Now, here is the twist and the kicker. The Pune Additional Sessions Judge, K. Vadane, who granted the extension of time to the Pune police in November 2018 and who also later took cognizance of the supplementary charge sheet against Sudha Bharadwaj, Arun Ferreira and Varvara Rao in February 2019, did not have the authority to extend this case. Bharadwaj's legal team cited a Supreme Court judgment in the case of Bikramjit Singh versus the state of Punjab, where it was clarified that once a state government designates special courts under the NIA Act, then any offence under the UAPA, regardless of the agency investigating it, can only be tried before that special court. Going by the UAPA, even pre-trial matters like extension of charge sheet and taking cognizance of a charge sheet have to be then heard by one of these special courts. Now, Maharashtra state government had designated special courts under the NIA Act in 2017. So the request for extension of time by the Pune police was supposed to go to one of those. Instead, they went to the court of Judge Vadane, who was not a designated special judge. It was this lack of quote-unquote competency of the court to extend the time limit to file the charge sheet that led to the Bombay High Court's conclusion that Bharadwaj has to be granted bail. The essential part of the default bail is that the accused has to file their default bail applications when their right accrues, that is around the 90-day mark, but before the police go and file a charge sheet, according to various decisions of the court, including a Supreme Court judgment in October 2020. And as I said, timing is everything in this bail plea. The other 8 accused in the case also filed for default bails on the same grounds. But unlike Bharadwaj, who filed her default bail plea on 26 November 2018, they filed their default bail applications well after the charge sheets were filed. And that's why the Bombay High Court denied their bail. But the question here is, if the court which granted the extension did not have the jurisdiction to do so, shouldn't the others be allowed bail as well? Why can't the court take cognizance of that? Vakasha Sachdev, the Quince legal editor, says that there is a conversation that needs to be had when it comes to personal liberty and freedom, especially in cases like these.
So essentially, the issue of timing is, it's weird sometimes to maybe think of this as being such a formally important thing, right? It's little technicality that this could potentially affect someone's liberty. But there is, there's a whole conversation I think that needs to be had about whether is there really a space for this kind of formality and technicality when it comes to liberty and personal freedom. The issue is that there's been a line of cases over the years which have held that if you don't file that bail application on time, then you are not, you're losing your right to bail. Now, this is a strange thing because it's actually a weird concept in general. If you're looking at a person's rights, the things which are supposed to accrue to you as rights by virtue of the law, which are put in as safeguards against misuse. It's strange that there's a concept of waiver, but that's something which unfortunately received the Supreme Court stamp of approval. Last year in October, there was a Supreme Court judgment which went into this, and they kind of put the stamp and the seal on this that yes, this is what the position has been and this is what the position will be. And it's a 3-judge bench of the Supreme Court in the M. Ravindran versus intelligence officer case, where they've said that yes, this, you know, default bail is a right. Yes, it's something which is important to protect liberty, but you have to exercise that right in time. And they say that, you know, look, it's very simple to exercise the right. You just have to file the application. And once you file that application, that will last regardless of what comes after. But if you don't file that application on time, which is basically somewhere, you know, around when the 90-day period ends and before the police then go and file a charge sheet, then your right to default bail is getting extinguished. It's something which perhaps I think, you know, when this order came out last year, I don't think we gave enough attention perhaps to it. Maybe we should have been. Maybe there is a need for this to be revisited in the courts. But unfortunately, in terms of what the law is at this point and what would bind the High Court, you know, this three-judge Supreme Court bench clearly saying that, yes, the right to default bail will not continue once the police file a charge sheet. And here, you know, the 8 other accused just didn't file it on time. Now, they'd been making some of these arguments and they were all trying a bunch of things. It's obviously a very confused situation as a whole. So it's difficult to lay any blame that, okay, you didn't file this application. Nobody really knew what was going on half the time with this case. There was so little ability for them to communicate with people, communicate strategy, really look at the timelines and things that, you know, it's unfortunate that it happened, but it's true. Luckily, Sudha Bhardwaj did hers on time. And the interesting thing is the NIA tried to fight her default bail application another timing issue, because they said, okay, look, she filed hers in 26 November 2018. And that was premature, because what's interesting is that when these, that eventually now what's happening is that the courts are saying, when you're looking at the period spent in custody, you do not look at the period spent under house arrest. Another very, very counterintuitive thing, and something which just seems very against the idea of liberty. And the interesting thing is that they now are considering that the period during when a person's during house arrest should not be considered for this question of custody. And the hilarious thing is the NIA was saying, oh, so therefore, you know, the 90-day period wasn't coming up in November 2018. It actually was going to come up in January 2019. So her application was premature and should be ignored and should not be considered. At least here, the Bombay High Court kind of put its foot down and said, hey, you know what? That's way too formalistic a thing. And let's be clear here, you know, you yourselves, the investigating agency, not the NIA, obviously, but the investigation agency at the time, which was the Pune police themselves, thought it was going to be November because they asked for that extension in November 2018. And regardless, even if you consider, yes, it was a bit early and all of that, like there was still, even if you look at the timeline, which is when the 90-day period expired, even if you exclude the house arrest period, that was January 2019. And the charge sheet was only filed in Feb 2019. So, you know, her right definitely accrued. And this is where she got the benefit of that unfortunate judgment, which proved a problem for these guys. Because there, if you remember, they had said that if the moment you file it, then that lasts for as long as it takes. It's there regardless of what happens. So the moment you file that application. So for her, a very beneficial thing. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for those guys. It's a matter of, unfortunately, it's one of these strange formalistic things which sometimes can become an issue when it comes to criminal law. I think, therefore, definitely something worth revisiting.
Along with Bharadwaj, the other accused in the case are Sudhir Dawale, Shoma Sen, Surendra Gadling, Mahesh Raut, Runa Wilson, P. Varvara Rao, Vernon Gosavles, and Arun Ferreira. The Bombay High Court in its judgment said that, quote-unquote, the applicants did not avail of the right of default bail, and that, quote-unquote, the right to default bail would get extinguished as it cannot be said that the accused availed of his right to be released on default bail. So is there anything that the other accused can do to file for bail now? Was a default bail the only option?
So unfortunately, with the rejection of default bail for the other eight accused, I think their best bets are going to end up really sort of being medical bail, where it's as serious as what happened to Varavara Rao and why he's out on bail. On merits, I mean, it's this tricky thing that on merits, even though these are UAP cases, the cases are just so flimsy. They're so flimsy that ideally, yes, the courts should be saying, you know what, the police may have filed charge sheets, they may have done all of this. This may be UAPA, you may be, the 43D5 aspect of the UAPA where it makes it really difficult to get bail in terror cases. All of that may apply, but I mean, the conditions really aren't met because for that bar on bail to apply, the courts have to say, have reasonable grounds to believe that the case against the accused is true. And I think in the circumstances here, it really, really, that standard, I don't see how it can be met. I mean, the courts don't have to look at even going to the evidence here to make that call. I mean, there's so many issues with the evidence, which, you know, including the issues over planting and all that, which have come up over the last year. But without that as well, the allegations are just so utterly, brazenly concocted that, I mean, technically the courts have that power. But, you know, it's really hard when there's a charge sheet, when there's such serious claims for the court on merits to grant bail. Default bail was, I think, one of the best options for all of them because it meant you could bypass, you know, the UAPA strict scrutiny. You didn't have to be able to show medical issues which cannot be treated in the government hospital, etc. Like, I mean, it was the perfect way to kind of get out of all of this. But without that, it's going to be really hard. I think at the end of the day, they're going to have to try and challenge that M. Ravindran order if they're going to try and succeed. And I think that's the really tricky part because this isn't just like a two-judge bench of the Supreme Court. It was a three-judge bench of the Supreme Court which held this. So I would be, I'm afraid I don't really see a lot of good scope for them to be able to argue, you know, really against it. Unless they're able to find a way to say that, you know, maybe there is another judgment of the Supreme Court somewhere. There is some other aspect of constitutional law which comes up and they're able to successfully point that out to say that Ravindran got it wrong. Without that, I don't think they will be able to succeed in appeal.
Initially, the Bombay High Court ruled that Bharadwaj would be released on 6 December after being produced before an NI special court in Mumbai, where the judge will pass the order detailing the conditions of the bail. However, the NI objected to this and requested a stay on the bail order, stating that, quote-unquote, a pure question of law arose in this matter and the decision in this case may have repercussions on other cases as well, end quote. The investigation agency has now sought a stay to approach the Supreme Court. Bharadwaj is now being produced before the NIA Special Court on 8 December instead of 6 December. But does the NIA have any legal grounds to play on to request a stay in this default bail plea? According to Vakasha, the wording of the law makes it clear that only NIA courts can be allowed to hear cases on UAPA. So, it is unclear on what grounds they are planning to seek a stay on.
So I really cannot understand what grounds the NIA think they have for appeal here. Because if you look at the court has spent a lot of time sort of very carefully plotted out what the law on this point is. They've referred to the Supreme Court's Bikramjit judgment, which again also did the same thing, last year, sort of really carefully plotting out the sort of scope of the NIA Act, the scope of its provisions on special courts, and when that comes into play. And it's a very, very carefully, sensibly done operation. So at the end, I mean, the NIA's argument is saying that, look, when it comes to cases not investigated by the NIA, and remember, right, that the Bhima Koreka case was not being investigated by the NIA initially. It was only suddenly transferred to them when the new Maharashtra government wanted to conduct a review. Now, what the NIA says, that special courts, which is the whole issue here, right? That those courts don't have to hear these matters unless the NIA is hearing it, which is partly sort of correct, but it's an utterly bizarre thing, right? Like, why would you have these special courts being designated only for NIA investigated cases? And the wording of the Act is very, very clear. I think Section 22 of the Act really, really makes it clear that, you know, it's going to be these special courts which will hear it. Yes, the concept of a court is an inclusive definition, but when it comes to the moment a state government has designated it, it's very, very clear that it's going to be only the special NI courts which will hear these matters. And the thing is, Maharashtra not designated any courts as special NI courts, and this would not be there. And there's a very clear provision, section 22, subclause 3, basically says that there is no designated court, then the court of sessions will have jurisdiction. So it's really clear, I think, and I really don't see what grounds the NI have to go and challenge this. The Supreme Court, as we said, took a long time to really look through this in this Bikramjit Singh case last year, and it was Rohinton Nariman as a judge who wrote that. And he was not someone who got, you know, law and statutory interpretation wrong. And the High Court spent its time and taken its time and looked at that reasoning here before passing its order. So, I mean, I really, really can't see grounds for a stay on, you know, the part about Sudha Bhardwaj in the court. It's clear that the investigating agency at the time made a mistake. So on paper, there should be no possibility of a stay.
In total, 16 activists, lawyers, academics were arrested by the Pune police and the NIA in this case. Several of these accused suffer from illnesses, and the oldest of them, Father Stan Swamy, passed away in jail earlier this year. He had also contracted COVID-19 during his custody. To stay updated with this story, follow The Quinn on all our social media handles and keep listening to the Big Story podcast. If you like listening to this episode, please subscribe to the Big Story for episodic updates. We're available on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, JioSaavn, and most of the other popular podcast streaming platforms. For other podcasts, please log on to the Quinn website. And for any feedback, please shoot an email to podcast@thequinn.com.
Thanks for listening. Log on to the Quinn's website and check out our other podcasts.